But the biggest mistake I made was in the end of 2007, I was making a killing online. I was killing it with my celebrity site. I had a fashion site. I had a makeup site. I got really depressed, though, because I didn't wear makeup. You know, I only wore a dress once in college. And I really hated celebrity gossip.
This is Superfast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here from superfastbusiness.com. Welcome back to the show. Today I've got a super authority in the blogging niche, Derek Halpern from socialtriggers.com. Welcome to the call.
Hey, what's up, man?
Well, I'm down in Mexico, so we sort of rigged up a little bit of a microphone here, but I don't let travel stop me from getting the good discussions going, and that's why I hit you up. I know you're in a sort of similar time zone. You're over there in New York?
Yes, I am. New York City, baby.
Do you travel much, Derek?
Yeah, so people always ask me this question, and it's funny because I have the freedom to go wherever I want. You know, I can leave right now and go anywhere I want, but I don't travel at all. Like, nothing makes me happier than just being able to wake up, walk to the park, stare at the sky, read a book, and just chill out locally. Actually, I avoided travel so much that I just got my passport like 3 months ago. So I was like one of those 80% of Americans that didn't have their passports until like they were adults.
Right. So, you know, I've found with travel that it's been really interesting to observe different cultures, to find out the way that people deal with business, with social stuff, transport. And it's been interesting for me to incorporate that into my business. But your main business thing is observing research documents and then talking about that on your show. Is that a summation of how you would see what you do?
Well, sort of, right? My whole business genre is about helping entrepreneurs just get ahead in life. And I found that Dan Pink said it best in one of his TED Talk. He said, there's a gap between what science knows and what business does. He said this in a 2009 TED Talk for his book, Drive. And what's very interesting is when he said that, I remember my eyes lighting up. Because how many times do you know the right answer to something and see people do it wrong anyway? And that's what my whole business is, finding people who are doing things wrong and try to show them the right way of doing things. This happens to be rooted in using research, personal tests, and stories of other entrepreneurs to help bring that to life. You know what I mean? So research is part of it, but really it's about helping people find the right way of doing things.
Well, I think we're probably, you're talking about the why and the how, right? With this research stuff, is it hard to get access to the documents?
So it's not as hard as you would think. You have to look for it, obviously. And there's different, you know, there's things like Google Scholar where you can find it. But to get the new research, the stuff that's just coming out every quarter, published in the periodicals and the journals and everything like that, I actually donated money to a university in New York City just so I can gain access to their library. Because their library, they have access to all the research documents you could ever want. So I donated money so I can basically borrow books from the university library. It's kind of nerdy if you think about it, but that's how I did it.
Well, I like that. I like the aspect of getting yourself an advantage of figuring out, I guess that's kind of like a 4-hour work week hack, isn't it? Just that little thing. It's like a membership card to a club that costs a little bit more but gets you so many more privileges. How much did you know or how qualified were you about persuasion and this sort of topic and field that you're studying now before you started publishing it on the internet?
Yeah, so I actually, when I went to college, I was one class away from a major in psychology. So I basically majored in psychology in college. But to be honest with you, I actually probably forgot everything that I learned right after I, you know, like as I was learning it. I was just going to college to learn psychology, to learn to take tests. That's it. However, where I really got my you know, gritted my teeth in the persuasion space was two different places. I used to play a lot of poker. And I played a lot of poker. I'm saying hours upon hours of poker. We're talking like 10 hours a day. So I learned a lot about persuasion at the poker table. That was the first place. The second place I learned a lot about persuasion is actually I did this really horrible job when I was 18 years old. I worked for a sign company. It was like a sign company that would make the signs and then they would hire installers to install the signs. And my job there, I was getting paid like, you know, maybe 10 bucks an hour or whatever. My job was to find people in different states around the United States who would install our sign for like 800 bucks. I wanted to find people who would install our sign in a local location for $800. So I had to do a lot of phone calls trying to give people business. But they said I couldn't spend more than $800. I turned it into a game where I always tried to see how much people would want to do this for. What's the least amount of money that people would do it and still do a good job? And I somehow convinced people to do it for like 500 bucks or 400 bucks just by like practicing talking on the phone. So that's kind of like where I really got my, you know, gritted my teeth was poker and this in sign installation thing. Very weird.
Right. So you've taken a sort of a, and I guess it must have been, well, maybe I'm assuming, but it must have been a slight interest for you to have taken a course in it. Of all the courses you could have taken, you've then found a commercial application. You've got some in the field experience.
Yep.
Do you treat business like a big game?
Yes. So that's probably stemmed from the fact that I was a very competitive chess player when I was in my teens. I was also, poker was the same thing. Poker was a game to me. I played these things called collectible card games. Are you familiar with this at all?
Like baseball and stuff?
No.
The like Trump cards?
No, like Magic the Gathering.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of it.
Very weird. So I used to play games like that, and I played that very competitively as well. Like I did this one game called it's called the Spoil. I mean, I'm probably making people think I'm like the weirdest dude in the world right now.
Well, I think so far they're not going to engage in a game of poker with you or chess.
Yeah.
So you're kind of limiting your options if you want to be entertaining yourself out there.
Yeah, so I mean, I played this game called The Spoils, and I did that competitively where I traveled around the United States to 44 states in 3 months where I was getting paid to play like a child's card game, essentially.
Yeah, well, you look interesting. When I was selling, I used to play Gran Turismo, and I love that's a car game on PlayStation, and I love the aspect that you had to win races to reinvest the prize money into developing your car so that you could win a better race to get more prize money to develop your car or trade it for a better one. I saw the analogy, and it was really also a nice relief for me to be able to let some steam off. Now, in your sales and marketing, I've noticed that you use a certain tone or I guess a leadership positioning. You have quite an authoritative style. I would call it directive. I think I've even asked you about it before. You are very, very clear and yeah, firm about what your reader or your listener should do, and you do ask them to do a lot often. Go and rate this or click on this link or go here and do this or submit this entry. Could you talk a little bit more about that and the sort of results that's been getting?
Yeah, so let's just be clear for a second. I am from New York City, so if you paint a picture of what you think a New Yorker would look like, I am probably that person. I'm loud. I'm a little brash. Some people hate me. Some people love me. That's just my personality, and I let that show through online. And it tends to be this directive or authoritative personality. I've just always had that. And I do that for a couple of reasons, especially as it relates to business. I'm of the mind that if you go to like my site, socialtriggers.com, you go there, you'll find that I give out a lot of free content. I do weekly videos. I do podcasts. I do all this great stuff for people. Now, this content I'm releasing into the world because I honestly want to help people get ahead in whatever they're trying to do. Nothing makes me happier than getting an email from someone telling me that I helped change their life. However, I make it very clear that even though the content they get doesn't cost them anything, that it's not free. You usually got to do something for it. Now, it's not like required. I don't tell people you have to share this article to unlock access to it. It's more like just doing the right thing. Hey, since I did this for you, it'd be cool if you can do this for me. And I don't track it. I don't require them to do it. But since I'm being so helpful, people want to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think that could be described as a reciprocation. And you're just reminding them of that. So how often do you come across a piece of research and then have, oops, you know, I've been doing something wrong, or wow, there's somewhere I could really improve or change the way that I'm running my own business?
Yeah, so that's always a good question. And a lot of people say they always want to know, where do you find your research? And then they also want to know, does the research actually help? But it's funny because I might read 100 articles, 100 academic papers. I might read 20 books before I'll finally find something that will change my life. So to find this good stuff, the stuff that really matters, is very hard, and it requires you to be very scholarly. However, when you do find it, it's the difference between, you know, making $1,000 and making $1 million. It's just like that's the type of impact this stuff can have on your business. So I don't find it that often. When I do, I tend to share a lot of it as content. And I also tend to figure out how to apply this research directly to whatever it is I'm working on for myself, and also show people how to apply it to themselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so you've started out this blog. You call it Social Triggers. How do you feel about having a brand name like that versus putting it under your own name? I mean, interesting that you prefer to stay at home. You've got some different viewpoints on some of the other people in the internet business space, but you did take a businessy sort of decision to have a blog brand instead of a personal brand like johnchow.com, for example. What's your take on naming?
Yeah, so I think you have to pick the name that you can grow into. Now, depending on what you're trying to do, using yourname.com is a great way to do it. I mean, my friend Marie Forleo, she does marieforleo.com. And that's great for her because she has a lot of different passions and she could talk about everything that she wants to talk about under her name, and she's never going to be pigeonholed, because how can you be pigeonholed into your own name? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think using your name is a great idea. On the flip side, I chose socialtriggers.com because when I first started it, I always had in the back of my mind that what I was doing could be bigger than me. It's not bigger than me yet, but I thought what I was doing could be bigger than me. So I gave myself an opportunity to pursue that if I wanted. If you go to socialtriggers.com, I got a picture of myself in every blog post. It's really Derek. It's like the Derek Halpern show, yes. But I have the option to expand.
Right. So is that what you advise people to do with their own site?
No. I advise them to look at themselves and figure out what they're trying to do. I think if you want to build a lifestyle brand where you're traveling the world, living the life, using yourname.com is a great way to do it. And the best part is, as your interests change, so can your website. If you use a website like socialtriggers.com, you'll find that it's much harder to expand or change your interests. However, when I pick that as an example, Social Triggers is a site that I can grow into still. I'm not pigeonholed into talking just about psychology and blogging. I can really talk about the psychology of everything, from fitness to health to any, like just how to do anything right. So I'm actually right now, after being known as this blogging marketing guy for a while, I am starting to talk more about things like productivity and social skills and other types of things that make people better people.
How long has the blog been going so far?
Actually, I just passed the 2.5-year mark. I launched in March of 2011.
Okay.
March of 2011. So it's now more 2.5 years old. I can't even believe it, actually. I can't believe the time flies like that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. You know, I was speaking to Noah Kagan about AppSumo, and he was telling me that, you know, he expected to be going broader, but he just started in the startup niche, and it's just so big. So it's interesting you've lasted a few years in that part of the sphere where you're at, and now you're going broader. And you can definitely do that under your brand. I think that's a great brand for that. A lot of my listeners have a website. They're probably doing blog posts and some video, perhaps audio, like the I teach in owntherace.com. And I'm interested in just some of the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
I noticed that you recently restarted podcasting.
Yep. I did.
Why?
So I got to tell you, you're going to laugh. I think podcasting straight up is one of the dumbest things in the world if you're not going to take it seriously. However, if you do take podcasting seriously and you actually want your podcast to be like one of the best podcasts in the world, you want to take it seriously, I think podcasting allows you to do something that nothing else allows you to do. And what is that? It allows you to create content that you upload to, say, let's say iTunes or whatever. But as you get bigger and you build an audience, you can have your podcast syndicated. Now, if you can get your podcast syndicated on like a radio station or many radio stations, what does that really mean, syndicated? That means a radio station is going to pay you to air your content to their listeners. They're going to pay you to build your brand for you.
I love it.
You see, that's why I'm going back into podcasting.
Yeah, the part I like is that you state the customer's question out loud for them and then answer it. You've got such a style there.
Let's just talk about that for a second. I know kind of that's very self-serving, but a lot of people here that you have listeners for, they are in the business of building their own business. So I say this because that's like the benefit to the listeners. But now the benefit to the listeners of my podcast, there's the other benefit of the podcast is the fact that we live in a very mobile world. People are traveling to work. People are going to the gym. Right now, when people are at the gym, I don't have any way to communicate with those people. You're not going to read an article while you're at the gym. You're going to pop on a podcast for 40 minutes while you work out. Now I have the opportunity to give people more content that they love while they're at the gym or driving to work or going for a walk. This, I was unable to reach those people until you have a podcast that you release every week. But the business side was the syndication.
Yeah, I think if someone has a good message and they believe in it, they should be podcasting with a real show. And certainly in my case, it's been phenomenal. It's by far and away the best traffic source for my business because of the accessibility. And I'm pleased to see you've restarted that. And also, I think you just hit number one in the business category.
Yeah. So I hit number one in business for a couple of days. There's no way I'm going to be able to keep that because the guy who has number one is syndicated across like hundreds upon hundreds of radio stations.
Right. That's the Dave Ramsey show.
Yeah. So he's there syndicated. And let me tell you, I want to be syndicated.
Well, that's good. You know, my audience are super familiar with the podcasting and reasons why, but I think you've really added some dimension there with the syndication part because that's not something that I think we've discussed on this show before. Do you also do paid traffic?
I do. I do a lot of Facebook traffic. I do remarketing, like retargeting, where you have your ads follow people around the internet, I do that through the Google AdWords.
Yep.
I've also experimenting with buying one-off ads on random websites that I think might convert. And I'm going to be going more into paid traffic over the next 6 months. But mainly Facebook has been my target.
Right. Yeah. It seems that it's a pretty popular format. And of course, you sell courses.
Yep.
And do you think that's the best way to monetize a blog / video / podcast show is to have courses? Because I know I don't think you put sponsored ads on your surrounds and stuff like some people's monetization. I had John Lee Dumas on here and he sells advertising on his show and we were talking about how much more he could make if he had his own courses and stuff.
Yeah. So I don't believe in advertising. I don't know if you know this, but did you know that before Social Triggers, I ran a celebrity gossip website?
I did know that just because I've heard you talking about it. I have actually purchased your course. Which is it Blogging That Converts or something?
It's Blog That Converts, yeah.
Blog That Converts. So I did purchase that because of the material, but I knew that you're good at this discussion marketing or the comments. You get a lot of comments, you get talked about, and I think that's where the value might be for our listeners.
Yeah. So what's interesting is just back on that is before what I'm doing now, I basically had a celebrity gossip site. In that celebrity gossip world, you live and die by two things. One thing is how much traffic you can generate. The best way to generate traffic in that industry, you can't buy it because the traffic isn't really worth that much money. So you can't buy it, but you have to get people to talk about you for free is the only way to get traffic in that industry, essentially. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is you live and die by how much money advertisers are willing to pay you. I've discovered that ad rates have plummeted over the last 6 years or so because impressions are unlimited on the internet, essentially. So ad rates plummeted, and I found out when in that celebrity gossip world, I wasn't in control of how much revenue I can bring into my company. I was always at the mercy of the ad rates. So I hate advertising because I never want to be at the mercy of some ad buyer for some other company. You know what I mean?
Ah, totally. I'm on the same page. You know, I've stopped my affiliate program at the end of last year. I did your course. I did some conversion work on my site, and I really decided to start earning my listenership. I mean, you've heard about me from several people now, and that's the long-term goal, is to be remarkable in an industry where a lot of people are just pimping stuff as an affiliate, or they're doing the sponsored ad thing, which is really kind of selling out part of your real estate because you don't know what to do with it in a way.
Yeah.
And I like to promote my own products and services from my own website. I've got the entire end-to-end system, a lot like Steve Jobs had with his own ecosystem. That's the ideal for me. And
yep.
I think you're very, very strong, and that's a great contribution you've made to the market. And you've also, I think, popularized this opt-in box on the top of every single website.
Yeah, the feature box is what I called it.
The feature box.
It's so funny that no one did that before. I mean, I learned – it's like I talk matter-of-factly about stuff when I can talk matter-of-factly about stuff, right? And I can say with full – that the feature box will increase your list size. If you don't have a feature box on your website and you're trying to use your website to convert, I think you're a moron because it just converts so well. I had this one friend of mine that I told him to put a feature box on his site for 6 months. He didn't listen to me. Then one day he emails. He goes, Derek, I got to say I'm sorry. I was like, why you got to say sorry? He's like, well, after not listening to you for 6 months, I finally put the feature box on my blog and I'm getting like 700 opt-ins a day now. And I was like, well, don't apologize to me. Go look in the mirror and apologize to yourself. It didn't hurt me, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of those things. You mightn't have been the first person to do it, but you're certainly the one to give it some priority and talk about it everywhere and get associated with it, which is one of the things you teach in your course. I thought that was fascinating. It's kind of like what I've done with my own The Race course, is put forward this idea that you want to control your own asset, because that's a huge mistake I see people making. They're putting out as much content as you or I, but they're putting it all on Facebook or YouTube and not even having a website, which I think is just crazy. I mean, you can't put the feature box if you don't even have the website.
Yep.
So let's just talk about – interesting, you and I have both done something that I think the listeners would get some value from. I started changing what I was wearing a little bit for my audience after getting some comments about attire. And I've noticed you've gone through – certainly from some of the older videos I've seen, now the videos with your stethoscope, which I think you call a tie. I joke with you because you don't do it up, which I don't understand. But tell me about why you've gone through this change in style. Is this to get syndicated?
Did I tell you I tested my clothing? Did I ever tell you about this? I might have talked about it in a video. I don't know if I ever published this video yet or not, but I tested my clothing. I went to conferences where I showed up wearing a t-shirt and jeans and sneakers, right? And I kind of gauged the audience. I showed up to another conference wearing a suit with a t-shirt and sneakers, tested the audience. I tried a full-on suit with a button-down and a tie. I tested the audience. Then I tried a suit without a tie with dress shoes. And I basically tested the audience. And then I discovered that when I wore t-shirt and jeans and sneakers, people looked at me and they were like, this guy's kind of smart, but he's like a young punk. Cause I'm definitely in my late 20s. And people would look at me as, this guy's loud, a little bit obnoxious and brash. He's a punk. But I kind of like this stuff a little bit. When I wore the suit, with the button down, the frame of mind people had was completely different. It was more like, this guy's a professional, and he's willing to say what he means with authority. Look at him. So I actually saw people change the way they talked to me based on how I dressed. When that happened, I decided to start talking to a stylist. I wanted to ask them. I hired a stylist. I asked them some questions about this. And they told me, and I quote, he goes, Derek, you're already loud, brash, and obnoxious. If you show up in a t-shirt and jeans, yeah, that fits you, but it's kind of expected. However, if you show up in a suit and you're the same way, it creates this contrast that makes you a little bit more memorable. That's what they told me. So they first wanted me to start wearing ties all the time. And I was like, oh my God, I hate ties. You call them the stethoscope. I call ties like a little animal on my back trying to pull me off my feet. That's what I think a tie is. It's like choking me down. So I was like, I don't want to wear the tie. I think that's a little too buttoned up for me. So he said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a tie, but we're not going to pull it up all the way. You're going to leave the top button open. And then in your videos, I want you to roll up your sleeves. That way you kind of have this look that you're being professional, but not so tight and buttoned up about it. You know what I mean? That was the reason why I went that clothing route.
Gotcha. This is interesting for you because you'll pick up more of an Australian audience from this. Certainly, with private schools, with corporate. I came from a corporate like Mercedes-Benz arena. To have your tie down, we used to call that half-mast, and it was considered very sloppy and unprofessional. So for me, when I see that, I'm like, I don't get it. If you're gonna go with a tie, you wear it properly or don't wear it at all. And yeah, that could also be something to do with the English heritage here. But I also have been through the same styling exercise, not with a stylist, but by, you know, putting trial by audience where they we had a big debate and I did a test on my video. I actually did one video in a t-shirt and hoodie, unshaven. And then in the other half of that video, I shaved and had a nice shirt. And my audience said, this was the outcome. If they didn't know me, they thought I was scruffy. And then when I start talking, they start to feel that what I was talking about was sensible. And then they were okay. Once they knew me, it wouldn't matter what I wear. They just want the content and it's great. But when I look back at some of my older videos, I can see now why they might have thought I was a bit scruffy or whatever. And that sort of leads me to this next question. Do you ever go back and prune some of your old content or wish that you could reshoot it, or do you curate it yourself?
What do you mean?
Do you ever go back and delete old videos or update them and, you know, lift the whole brand value?
Yes. So there are some videos that I actually unlisted on social, on my YouTube channel or whatever, but I don't recommend people delete videos. There's no reason to really delete them, but I do understand why to do it. People kind of like to see the evolvement of what you're doing as well. You know, a lot of people think that they need to show off this great, perfect persona online so people don't judge them. But you'll find that if people see improvement, they'll actually identify with the improvement more than being completely perfect.
Well, I guess it shows them that you are just a normal person after all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially if you, what your words, brash, loud, then they might want to also see that humility of the journey, because yes, it would work in your favor. Okay, so we've got a feel for what you're doing. We've got a feel for where you came from, and you've even shared with some of the stuff of what you're going to be doing in the future as well. What do you think the biggest mistake you've ever made would be that you would not do if you went back?
If I went, so hindsight is 20/20, right? Mm-hmm. But the biggest mistake I made was in the end of 2007, I was making a killing online. I was killing it with my celebrity site. I had a fashion site. I had a makeup site. I got really depressed, though, because I didn't wear makeup. You know, I only wore a dress once in college. And I really hated celebrity gossip. So what did I do? At that exact moment, I was depressed. All my friends were working in corporate America. I decided to walk away from my web business, and I got a job at a Fortune 100 financial company.
Wow.
I earned in a year what I basically earned in like 2 months online. And I did that because I didn't know better. And I thought that the answer was to become professional. So that was probably my biggest mistake, is I went into the corporate world. And I lasted there for 2 years. And don't get me wrong, I was in the dream corporate position. I was in a finance company. I reported into a VP that reported into a C-level executive. I was 23 years old at the time. And, well, yeah, 23 turned 24. And I had already had the opportunity to give a presentation on several occasions to like the vice chairman, C-level executives. I was great place for a corporation. I got promoted. I remember I got hired in December 2007. I got promoted in like 6 months. Most people waited 2 years for their first promotion. I got it in 6 months. So I was in like the dream spot, but I still think this is my biggest mistake, because I could have done so much more had I just changed my path in the internet business world.
Well, I suggest that it gives you great context to be able to help people who are in that situation, as I was, on a great job, $300,000 a year running a Mercedes-Benz dealership, and then I quit that to build my own business. And a lot of people ask me about that journey, about the mindset of starting a second business while you have the first job. And I think that could really serve your audience if you share that story.
I think one day I will. The reason why I haven't, because even though I started working for that company, I kind of outsourced my entire web business at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was still earning money on. I wasn't earning as much. It kind of spiraled out of control since I wasn't doing anything for it. But yeah. I think more than anything, you're right. It does help me get perspective. And it also helps me understand, because between me and you, after 2.5, I was like there for about 2.5 years. I watched my income go down every year because I was just earning so much more money online than they could have ever paid me. And then I realized, I looked at my boss, who was 10 years older than me exactly. And she was earning, you know, significantly more money than I was. And I looked at her boss, who was about 15 years older than her. Mm-hmm. And I looked at what he was doing. He was a C-level exec. And I knew how much money he was making, you know, about. And I thought to myself, I have to wait 25 years to get to that level. And then I started looking at my income. I looked at my boss's income. I was like, you know what? I'm really good at this. Maybe I could do it in 10 years. Then I started thinking about that. 10 years to get to that level. I was already at that level with my web business. So I wanted to restart the web business. But here's what's so funny. There I was. I graduated college making more money than I knew what to do with. I had a proven track record of success, but it took me like 5 months to pull the trigger on actually quitting my job and pursuing the web business.
Wow.
Because I noticed something that I would never have noticed had I not worked for corporate America. Corporate America has a weird ability to sap your confidence from you to be an entrepreneur, because corporate America tries to make you fit in a round peg to a round hole. And that's what you learn how to do. It's all about politics. It's all about getting ahead. It's all about doing good work. But being an entrepreneur is the exact opposite of that. And doing corporate America for a while, you have to just like reframe your thoughts. And it took me a while to pull the trigger again before I quit.
Oh, well, congratulations. And, I think you're probably a better person for that. You can't have light without shade. My grandma used to teach me.
That's a great quote. I might have to re-quote your grandma at another time.
Yeah, she was legendary. All right. So now, one thing I've noticed, you've done this really well, is you don't make money or revenue or dollars or get rich the real core of your offering, which is kind of the normal thing that people are doing online. And how did you manage to avoid that temptation?
Well, you know, I always thought about this for a second. Well, actually, it's rooted in psychology, right? If you talk about how much money you make, like a lot of these other internet clowns, it actually makes people want it, yes, but it also helps makes people resent you for it secretly.
Right.
And it might be motivating. It might help you get the sale. But I also hear that refund rates for some of these other guys in their internet space are like 20 or 30%.
I've actually seen some that are over 50%.
Yeah, so they got super high refund rates. They've got, now, mind you, I'm a sales guy. I know high refund rates is good because, not good, but it's also evident that you're selling people on buying your product. A high refund rate in the 15% or 20% range is not bad. It means you're converting the maximum amount of sales into your product, right? So that's great.
Well, I don't know. My refund rate is less than 1%, and I'm quite comfortable with that.
No, I know. So like there's two different mindsets, right? But if you look at a refund rate of 1%, that means every person who bought your product was the exact right fit for your product.
And I think that too, you know, in my marketing, I don't use a lot of hype or manipulation, or I could use a lot more pressure or sales techniques. I don't, but I love my customers and they stick with me forever and they get results. And so I think I stand out for all of those reasons. And that's why after you have a certain amount of money, there's no real need to put pressure on other people and get that discomfort happening.
Exactly. So that's one example. Like you want to basically, you want the exact right customer. That's the perfect customer always. Now I'm a little bit of a different mindset. I don't use hype, but I do want the perfect customer, the person who's going to get results, perfect, who's going to do really well. But I'm also of the mind that there are there's three types of people. There's the people who are going to love you forever. There's the people who are going to hate you forever. Then there's a third type of person, a person I like to call the sideliners. These sideliners might make up 80% of the people who follow you. These are the people who don't know if they should love you or if they should hate you yet. I want to turn those sideliners into people who love me or into people who hate me. And I know to do that, your refund rate will go up a little bit higher.
So you want to polarize some people?
Yes. So I want to get people into the course or the sale knowing that I want to help them. And if I don't help them, no problem. Take advantage of the refund rate. No hard feelings. If you think that if you end up hating me for this, you know what? That's fine. I've got thousands of people who love me. But I want to turn those people on the sideline over. And I think I want to focus on those people because I remember corporate America. I remember how hard it was for me to quit something, even though I knew it was the right decision for me. And at that very moment, I was personally a sideliner. You know what I mean? And I needed that kick in the ass to make me into someone else. You know what I mean? So I want to give those people, because I believe it's the right thing to do, to help people help themselves. And I can't do that without making sideliners turn into super fans, as they would say.
Cool. Well, you got to use your story after all.
Yeah, right?
you're a natural salesman, Derek. All right. So if you were recording this podcast, what sort of call to action would you ask your listeners to do? If you were me, since I've got the expert of brashness, of decisive calls to action, because we're going to wrap up this podcast now. So firstly, I want to say thank you so much for getting on the call. I know you have a busy schedule and I appreciate you taking the time out to share this with listeners. I also want to say to my listeners that I have done the Blog That Converts course and it was good. And I think that that would be useful for you if you're interested in building up an authority position like Derek has, because as he just mentioned, he's only been doing this for a couple of years in this space in particular. So Derek, what sort of advice would you have or suggestion would you have for this particular post?
Yeah. So if you are in the position where you would like to build a super raving fan base of people who actually want to buy what you sell, talk about you, etc., I've got a free email series that I can make available to your listeners, and they could access that by going to socialtriggers.com/JS, which is James Schranko, socialtriggers.com/JS, and you'll get put into a nice email sequence where you're going to learn how and why you should build an audience. You should also learn the psychology behind why people fail. You're going to learn a proven strategy that you can start using immediately to start growing your audience and a whole lot more. So that's what I would do for people who are still here listening.
Nice. Well, I'm sure it'll be everybody, of course. So thank you, Derek. It's been wonderful having you on the call. And there you go, listener. Derek's offering you some gold there, socialtriggers.com/JS. Hopefully, we'll have a follow-up call sometime in the future and find out what you're up to, because I'm sure it's going to be fascinating in the future for you, Derek.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.